We're talking to Tom Bias, CEO of Growth Energy. Tom, I understand you've been working on Capitol Hill today. Tell me what you're working on.
Well, you know, the Senate is now discussing moving on comprehensive energy legislation, and there's a number of priorities that we have as an industry that we want to see addressed. The infrastructure challenges that we face in moving to higher blends, mid-level blends, well into the future. We want to see mandatory flex fuel vehicle production in this country. We want to see blender pumps installed around the country, and that gives the power to the consumers, and you don't have to worry about whether or not they can utilize it in their vehicles in the future if they're all flex fuel vehicles. A lot of people say to me, why can't we do what Brazil did? Well, what Brazil did is exactly that. They built out their infrastructure, and they were able to become energy independent. And with two ways, one, all the new cars sold in Brazil today, 90% of them are flex fuel vehicles, and they're made by the same automakers that sell into this country or produce in this country. And the other second thing they have is they have ethanol and gasoline at every retail station in the country for the consumers to choose. And we think that's a long-term vision that needs to be realized if we're going to continue to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, create jobs here in America, improve our environment, and revitalize our rural communities. Second, we have a couple of issues that are timely. One being the blender's tax credit, which expires at the end of this year, and the secondary tariff on ethanol, which also expires at the end of this year. We'd like to see those extended and extended over a longer period, so we have the certainty of the marketplace and the certainty of the programs, and not this on-again, off-again, short-term extensions. We've seen what's happened to the biodiesel tax credit, which expired at the end of 2009, still hasn't been extended, and Congress has to grapple with those tax extensions and then those expiring in 2010. And that's going to be a very difficult process, to say the least. We're also pushing legislation to get federal loan guarantees for building a ethanol pipeline from the Midwest to the Northeast, which will lower our carbon footprint by moving ethanol by pipeline as opposed to using fossil fuel-powered vehicles to move it, and also lowers the cost to the consumer. We think that's a prudent policy. We're still pushing country of origin labeling for at the gas pump, so consumers know exactly every time they fill up their tank that roughly two-thirds of the money they're spending on a weekly basis is going to some other country's economy and not to the United States. And a couple of provisions in the 2007 Act that have really put a dagger in the ethanol industry in this country, one being the indirect land use changes theory, which has never been proven, not factual based, not based on science. And we want to see that taken away, as well as what we call the corn discrimination clause, which basically says that ethanol produced from corn starch based ethanol does not qualify for as an advanced biofuel, even if it meets the requirements of 50% less greenhouse gas emissions than gasoline. And we think that's discriminatory and not equitable across the board, and needs to be removed.
Tom, as Congress works on energy legislation now, with the Gulf oil spill, is Congress likely to look more favorably on these all renewable energy proposals?
Well, I think they should, Ken. We're the only viable alternative currently available to foreign oil. And over the last 40 years, we've had a lot of economic shocks based upon our dependency on foreign oil. We've had military conflicts. We spend $50 billion a year just keeping the shipping lanes open in the Persian Gulf for our addiction to foreign oil. We've witnessed over the past 2 months on a daily, hourly basis, the tremendous environmental devastation and tragic loss of life in the Gulf, and we think we're a better alternative.
Tom, we're expecting a big announcement from the EPA sometime in the next few weeks as far as the ethanol blend rate. Are you hearing anything there?
Well, as you know, Ken, we filed, Girth Energy filed the waiver to raise the blend rate from E10 to E15 a year ago last March. And EPA was required by law to give us a decision within 270 days, which was December 1st. And what they came back and said was things look favorable of the existing test by the Department of Energy, and we want to wait until we get a majority of those tests complete before making a decision on the waiver. And they thought it would be the middle of this year. Well, it's the middle of the year. We think they ought to move forward. We think the data that we submitted in the waiver request was ample support for moving forward. All our testing data on both engine durability and emissions equipment showed that there were no problems going to E15, and we certainly think it's beyond time to make the decision. So I would hope they make a decision very soon and hope that it's a positive decision, because just going from E10 to E15 is the equivalent of replacing 7 billion gallons of imported fuel and creating 136,000 jobs right here in America.
And we're getting into a situation with ethanol, the way it sounds, that we're going to need to expand the market here fairly soon.
Yeah, we're up against the blend wall, and everyone knew it, and that's why we filed the waiver a year ago, last winter, is because we don't have a problem producing. We just have these artificial barriers that keeps us from producing and contributing more to our nation's energy needs.
Well, there's been all kinds of speculation that, you know, they may go somewhere in between an E12 or an E13. Also, the talk that they may be looking at restricting it to newer model cars.
Yeah, everyone hears all that stuff, and in their letter to us in December of last year, they indicated that the testing that they had received up to that point showed that it was very positive for going to E15 for 2001 and newer vehicles. The waiver we filed allows them to go up to E15, so they do have some options there, although everyone tells me in terms of engine durability and emissions equipment, the requirements under the Clean Air Act, there's no difference going to E12 to E15. And so if you really want to send a signal to the marketplace and to lenders and investors to invest in the new technology and the new feedstocks, cellulosic ethanols, then you need that market space at the E15, because E12 just doesn't buy you much time.
If they do put some kind of a qualifier as far as, you know, newer model cars, I mean, that really takes away the impact of the higher blend, doesn't it?
Well, it's not perfect, but if you look at 2001 and newer vehicles, it's half the vehicle fleet and more than half of the consumption of fuel in the nation. So, you know, we have no control over what they're going to do or not do. But we want to see them move forward. Our preference, again, is E15 for everything. But I think the automakers and I think the small engine groups and the boat owners have raised a lot of stink, which makes people nervous about going forward. There is precedence for bifurcating the fuel delivery system. We have it out there now with a diesel, two types of diesel, for those diesel engines manufactured before 2007 and those afterwards. So it can be done. Is it perfect? No. We would prefer E15 for everything.
Tom, anything else on your mind today?
No, that'll do it.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Bias of Growth Energy.